Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studio where you'll hear a conversation about presentation design, strategies, tips, and tricks, running a design studio, and more. Here are your hosts from inside the design studio, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc. We're based in Southern California. I lead a full-service design studio with a design team of nine, plus an IT manager, a production manager. We got a lot of people running around, and it's all fun. And I've also been awarded as a Microsoft MVP for PowerPoint since 2004.
Hi, I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative, based in Montclair, New Jersey. We're a boutique visual communications firm specializing in presentation and data visualization design and training. I speak and write and train all over the country. And for the last couple of years, like Troy, I've been a Microsoft MVP, although much newer than Troy. I'm the newbie on the block.
Hi, I'm Sandy Johnson. I'm with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin. As a certified woman-owned business, I work with individuals and corporations across the globe to make sure that they PowerPoint responsibly. It's my goal every day to challenge their preconceived notions about what they think PowerPoint can and cannot do, so then I can elevate their materials, their presentations, and transform their personal or corporate brands to a level that they've never achieved before. I, too, am a Microsoft MVP, and I have been one since 2008.
I am excited to say this recording session right now has been something I've thought about and planned for well over 2 years. So thank you for listening, and thank you to the show co-hosts, Nolan and Sandy. Our first podcast is about the big, and big as in a good way, release of PowerPoint 2016 from Microsoft. PowerPoint is synonymous with presentations. It's the latest version. 2016 is the latest version in creating some confusion as well as great presentations. But it's in Windows, it's in Mac, there are mobile, and a lot of things have the 2016 name to it, but they're not all the same program in that they have different capabilities, limitations, bugs, and some of the user interface is different. Something that we as a group can easily talk about and will most likely need to constrain ourselves to maintain our family-friendly rating and to create a well-timed podcast here. Before we actually dive into that topic, I would love to just hear what's ever been up to design work this past week for you, Nolan, Sandy.
I focus mostly on presentation design for sales departments. And so this week I've dug in working with the company Georgia Pacific on template and presentation design. And I also am working on a very large ongoing conference that I've been a part of for the last 3 years, where we not only create presentations for breakout sessions, we work on the keynotes and actually speaker readiness to make sure that those breakout sessions aren't as boring as many conferences can be.
Nolan, what's up with you?
I just started on the annual new product line presentation for Seiko watches. They're one of my long-term clients. They debut each year in Basel, Switzerland next month. Interestingly, we actually used to do all the presentations in PowerPoint, and then at some point we switched to Prezi, largely because video was key and sales reps down the road needed to show it on iPads. But we've now come full circle and we're back on PowerPoint since Microsoft finally came through with a really good iPad version of PowerPoint. So I'm knee deep in beauty shots for watches and all sorts of stuff like that.
That's awesome. So for me, a bit outside of the presentation realm, although it's a client that came through presentation design, is we just received final approval this week on poster number 2 for the 2016 collector poster series for the WWE. But anyways, that's a whole print job. It's really fun. We get to work with a lot of nostalgic images and just create these huge oversized posters that are handed out. On the presentation side, I just wrapped up a show that was fun. It was really great because it was 10K projection across. So it was this massive concave screen, and it's just really, really big PowerPoint slides when you do that, very custom setups. And then it also had a layer or a pip for all the standard 16x9 presentations. And those were really beautiful because my office got to work with the client. We designed every presenter's presentation so that they all coordinated with these huge background displays. And it was fun. It was a great thing to develop. So all fun stuff.
Troy, just on that note, I think a lot of people see these sort of huge presentations like you do. I don't really do those, but they think it's got to be some sort of fancy software. It's very often just PowerPoint, right?
It's pretty much just PowerPoint set up in a custom way, but it's not PowerPoint. Hey, I'm going to connect my computer to the projector. It's, hey, I'm going to connect a series of computers to $400,000 worth of equipment to make this all come together. So PowerPoint's still the heart of it, but it's everything that happens after the computer that makes it just incredible. Okay, to kick things off, let's each answer the question, what version of PowerPoint do you currently use? For myself and my team, it's 2016, primarily for Windows. We still have a number of show computers with 2013. I have a couple with 2010. And we maintain, at the office, I have test computers. And they have versions going all the way back to 2003 on the Windows and 2011 on the Mac. But for the most part, it's Office 2016 for us at this point.
Well, you know, I'm in transition. I originally was thinking 2013 primarily, and because most of my clients are in 2010 and 2013, I try to work in those. But I have new computers, and they come, of course, ready with Windows 10 and PowerPoint 2016. And so I would say for the last month, I've really been diving into 2016.
I'm on 2016 because I just, on the PC side, I just bought a fancy new Surface. It's 2016, and there's no point in looking back on that one. But I am primarily, as you guys know, a Mac guy. So I spend most of my time on the Mac on, you know, I've got a MacBook Air, I've got an iMac, and I go back and forth, between 2011 for the Mac and 2016 for the Mac is, we're going to get into because, 2016 for the Mac still has, some issues I'm wrestling with. Seems like every day I come up with something new. But yeah, I go back and forth between 2011 and 2016. So it's about 50-50 for me.
Awesome. Let's talk about some of those little bugs a little bit later on today.
So, Sandy, you said, you know, you got a new computer, I got a new computer, and we sort of take what we're given with the new software, but that's largely because of the subscription model, right? You're not actually really anymore buying the box and installing a single standalone application, Office. Let's talk about that whole new subscription model because it can be really confusing for a lot of people, even me, who I think I understand it, I still get caught up every once in a while. So on all my computers, Mac and PC, I am running Office 365, which is a subscription model. And you guys are as well, correct?
Yes. Yeah. At this point, all subscription.
So it's a subscription, which means I think, Troy, you used the term you're renting the software, really, because you subscribe to it for a year. I think that's pretty much the only option. And then each year you have to re-up again. So it's the software model that people have been moving to. Adobe jumped on the bandwagon a while ago. Microsoft was, I think, a little late to the game, but most software these days is subscription-based. Not most, but a lot of it is. And it's a way to sort of guarantee a revenue stream. But also, I mean, that's a good thing for the company, but the good thing for the consumer is it's also a way to guarantee consistent upgrades or much quicker upgrades. So, you know, what was it? Used to be every 3 years approximately that Microsoft would come out with a new version. So if you wanted a new feature, you were pretty much waiting 3 years. Now, with this sort of rapid, you know, update situation, you can get a new feature every month because they are basically on a monthly basis.
Exactly. So if you don't have a new feature 1 month, wait and you'll probably get it to the next.
Yeah, and we've seen that because we work very closely as MVPs with Microsoft and the team, and we literally will be talking about something, whether it's a bug or a new feature or something, and it'll be in the next update, you know, literally a few weeks later, which is cool. And sometimes there's, you know, small fixes, and sometimes they're pretty big features.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. Pretty exciting. So subscription is where everything's going, in my opinion. I think Adobe led the way by ditching CDs and going to the Creative Cloud subscription. Microsoft's pretty much doing the same thing. I'm sure it's in better revenue for them. It also lets us get those updates and their developers to not be stuck waiting 6 months to see what they've created come out or 2 years or more. I think the advantages of the subscription are big, but it's mainly in the releasing of new features. And that makes it my recommended option for everyone. Everybody says, hey, what should I be using? I think the subscription is the way to go because of the new features. I know we'll talk about Morph at another time, but I mean, that only exists in subscription and we're using it like crazy on a number of these newer projects we've got rolling out. So it's fun.
Yeah, that's a good point. You don't get those updates if you have the standalone old school version. You have to be on the subscription. And, when people say, oh, should I upgrade to the new version of the software or this? The answer is always yes, because you're going to get there eventually. It doesn't necessarily mean you can't keep an old version on your computer if you need it to go back to it, run back to it like I do on the Mac, but you're going to get there. So just do it now. So I recommend everybody get on Office 365. There are a lot of good features. In addition to the updates, you get up to 5 installs. So you can have one on your laptop. You can have one on your desktop. You can have one on your iPad. If you get your significant other's computer, you can put the same. It's all the same. You're paying once, but you basically get 5 different copies of it. So that's a great thing.
Now, I would have to say that most of my corporate clients are not keeping up with that. I have one client who is on Office 365. The others are still running to catch up. It hasn't created any problems for me. Like you, Nolan, I will access an old version if I need to. But so when we say upgrade, it's probably a good policy for the individual user, the individual creative person, but corporations aren't there yet.
Well, and that's also, they're dealing with a whole bunch of other things. And enterprise and testing, and it's a much harder proposition for a corporation to move out of whatever version they're in. We all have clients that are still on 2010, which is fascinating.
Indeed.
wait, does anybody have a 2003 client still?
No.
I thought I did, but I think everyone's moved to the oldest of 2007.
That's actually for people who train and people like us who have clients, the whole subscription thing is actually, it's a challenge because sometimes it's actually hard to get the older versions. You know, Microsoft will automatically update you and then you suddenly turn your computer and find you don't have 2010 anymore, or you don't even have 2013. And your client says, oh, well, you know, it's not working for me and you can't test it. So we've had to jump through some hoops to actually get those older versions back.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I got to say that it's great that they're updating, but Microsoft can still be a little opaque in what they're updating and how they're communicating what's new. So they want to be helpful, and yet they're not really giving you all the information.
Well, hey, I have a question. Do either of you use the mobile app, the PowerPoint mobile app?
Occasionally for proofing. And, you know, if somebody sends me something and I'm out, you know, I can see what it's like on my phone, but I don't do any creation on the mobile apps, really.
Yeah, I do. I use the iOS mobile app a lot on my phone, quite a bit, but it's, again, just like Nolan, it's proofing. I'm getting files in from, I want to see what a file is that a client sent in. So I'll kind of just take a quick look at it to wrap my head around the request, even though I'm not working on that project. Or a lot of times it's the design team handing off stuff for me to look at and approve before it goes out to the client. So I've found that's been a really big use for me, but again, not really for creating content.
Well, I have to say I love Android. I'm an Android user, and like you too, I used it mostly for viewing PowerPoint. It's beautiful. I have the Galaxy Note 5, so I have an amazing screen and can see the slides beautifully. But recently, I had the need, sitting in a restaurant, no computer, a client needed something. And I was able to, because it's connected to OneDrive, which I think is the slickest thing, I picked up my most recent file, I made the edits, minor text edits, and sent it back to the client in Outlook off of my Android. It was amazing.
You know, unfortunately, because we have the mobile apps and everything, and things have gotten so much better with, you know, OneDrive and Dropbox and everything, that whole excuse of I'm away from my computer, I can't do it right now, is going away. I mean, you know, somebody says, oh, can you take a look at this? I can't, especially like when they're designers I'm working with, I can't really say, oh, I'm on my phone, I can't look at it. Or, can't do anything with it, you know, till I get back to the office. So there's no excuse anymore.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. It's intrusive.
Unfortunately.
Speaking of intrusive, let's see, because I don't think this is totally intrusive at all. The fact that, like Nolan said, new features just kind of pop in there. So what are the favorite features of PowerPoint 2016, Windows or Mac, that you've found at this point? For me, it's Morph, which is it's a slide transition that's really a new animation. And it's changed the way we develop slides. If you use Keynote, it's very similar to Magic Move. There are some very big differences, but it's a similar idea. It's if you're an old Flash designer like I am, it's tweening. You put something in one position, you put it on the next slide in the second position, and Morph figures out and animates it between the two positions and changes it and does some great stuff. We've been doing some really exciting, fun stuff with it just really recently. It's fun. So anyways, check out, you know what? You could check out the PowerPointblog.com, my blog. In February, it's all about Office 2016. But we did some really cool examples. We turned all the designers loose with Morph and just said, hey, make some examples we can post. So there's a really cool video with a whole bunch of just cool things we're done. They're animations, but only with Morph.
Cool. I have to check that out because I do a lot of self-running presentations with voiceover, music, that whole thing. And the animation take forever. So I haven't had the opportunity recently to apply Morph in that scenario, but I know it would be perfect. So I'm looking forward to seeing your blog. I don't know if you have checked this out, but have you seen the theme style presets for shapes?
No.
Here's in the shape styles dialog on the ribbon. There's, of course, we have the traditional theme styles, which apply different theme effects, but there's now presets in there. That, and here's my favorite part of it. It'll immediately apply a transparency to the fill, or it'll apply the gradient. I'm pretty sure that isn't in older versions of PowerPoint. I think it's exclusive to 2016. I love it.
Check it. I'm looking at it for the first time. I've never known. So it's under the, you select something, you go to format.
Yes.
And then you do the drop down, and underneath all the normal theme styles, there's a whole new set. I didn't know those were there.
That's new to me too. Wow.
I love it. Yeah, the transparency, and then, okay, get rid of the fill, just have the outline. Perfect. Just perfect.
But come on, how frustrating is that? That
we didn't know
about
it.
Two of the three of us didn't even know that. And that wasn't even in the what's new. I never saw it. So who knows when it showed up? That's the thing.
You know, Microsoft's better about categorizing or cataloging bugs that have been fixed, not new things that have been added.
One thing that I like that has been around for a while in 2016 is something called IV charts. Now that's a term we're probably going to use. Those are the new types of charts, and I think they're up to six new ones now. Things like tree maps and waterfall charts. There's like a circular type something.
The radar.
Oh, we've had radar before, radar. But this is like a circular. I forget what it's called. But these are new charts, and this is the start of a whole new way of looking at charts, I think. And I think as they add, when they add new charts, new types of data visualizations, which is a focus of mine, they're going to be adding them in this new style, this new form of a chart. And if you just sort of quickly glance at them, they look like any other chart. And I mean, they're under the same menu, and they're just listed now at the bottom, you know, in addition. But they do function a little differently because they're written a little bit differently, which means really they're still kind of in beta, which means you can't do everything with them the way you can a normal bar chart. So just be warned about those, you know, and they're not available on the Mac. So for example, if you create it on the PC, you create a great tree map, and then you open it up on Mac 2016, you can't do anything with it. You can't edit it, can't even move it around on the slide. So there's some limitations, but I think it's the start of something good. And I love tree maps. I've been asking for them for years.
So the same thing actually happens with when you open them up on legacy versions on the Windows side, they become PNG right. images. So, and a sunburst right. chart, that's the one you're talking about.
That's the one.
So for me, another big favorite for 2016 is you can take a PowerPoint, you can export it to video, which has always been great. But up until very recently, it was limited to 720p, and all the video editors want to work at 1080p. So they've basically reconfigured the three output settings. And now the highest level is a full 1080p video output. So that's really cool to have natively built in. I will throw a little plug here that if you just put in Shyam, S-H-Y-A-M, video PowerPoint into any search bar, you'll come up. He has a free little add-in that actually added from PowerPoint 2010, the ability to export videos to any resolution you wanted. So he created some really cool free software to do that. So we've been exporting 1080p for a couple of years now, but now it's built in, which I think is phenomenal. I think it's a good move.
PC only, of course, because you can't output on Mac 2016.
PC only. Yep, Windows side.
Exactly. So have you used Design yet?
No, I haven't played around with it as much as I should. I did try to show somebody once how to use it, and I couldn't get the right layouts, and I just moved on quickly. But you've played with it.
Well, I have. And, you know, it's really great if you insert a blank layout or open to the default blank layout and just start there. And here's what the tool is. Insert an image and a dialog pops up of design ideas that allow you to instantly have multiple layout ideas for that photo you just inserted. It's not perfect.
And a lot of those layouts are good. They're really true design layouts.
Really,
I like them.
And I like working with the blank. I think there's a few themes that it'll also work with. And I can't remember what those are. What I like is that for the everyday user, you can use the title slide, the title and content slide layout. And I think it's the title only layout to insert your images, and they will trigger, that will trigger the design ideas tool to give you different ideas.
Sandy, these are way different than like just normal layouts, right? It's not like, oh, picture on the right, text on the left, right? It goes sort of way beyond that.
Right. There's screened options. There's diagonals, image, and a shape. Very, very cool.
It layers things. It put things over shapes. It does all those kind of things that the three of us do for a living, right?
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, you know, you got to talk about, it's a really cool tool. This is the poster child for subscription, because they keep updating it every 2 weeks, it seems. There's something new in there, because they're actually having designers hand code all the looks for each of the layouts, and they just keep adding to their database. First of all, it's kind of a confusing thing because the actual tool is called Designer, but the button that you open up is called Design Ideas. And the last big limitation about it is it only works on Microsoft supplied templates, the default white one and some of their theme templates. If you have your own custom corporate template, it doesn't do anything. It just says, sorry, no ideas for this slider available. Basically, it's saying, and that doesn't stop it from popping open. Like Sandy said, it does pop open. So if you want to go back to the February blog posts of mine, I actually have a blog post about how to turn it off, because it gets kind of annoying if you can't use it. You feel like you've been cheated.
And like the charts, this is this is a feature that is really in beta. I mean, it's workable, but it's going to get better and better and better.
Exactly.
And again, I wish Microsoft was more transparent about these being beta, you know, features. They'll sort of come out with what's new. Hey, we've got, you know, Morph. Hey, we've got Designer. And people assume, oh, that's the feature. And if it's kind of rough around the edges or doesn't quite work, it's just, I think it's setting up a false expectation that this is a brand new, you know, fully formed feature.
I think I think we're going to see it. I mean, that's the difference between that whole perpetual license. You got what you had perpetually, you owned it, and the subscription. Hey, we're ever changing. I agree. Microsoft really needs to somehow become letting us know more about, hey, this is in process. We're very excited. Designer, hey, it's a great tool and we're continuously improving it. Now we get to hear some of that just, you know, in some of our conversations with Microsoft directly, but I don't think it's a general knowledge thing. So it's very exciting. I mean, I'm really excited about the way things are going.
And we should point out that a lot of these updates are only available, with the subscription model, they're not rolled out to everybody. If you want to make sure you're getting absolutely the latest and everything that the public is getting under the update, if you go to update, you'll get a little dialog box. There's a checkbox for, what is it, Office Insider program?
it's Office Insider if you're on a consumer level, and it's something else if you're on the enterprise level. I will say that at a corporate level, you may not have that available because your IT admin for Office 365 can enable or disable that feature for all the users. Hey, you know what? Going along that, another favorite feature of mine is the color schemes. I don't know if people have ever played with this, but you can go under, you know, file and options, and you can get rid of the orange bar at the top of Office. They have a dark gray color scheme, which I love. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's definitely close to being good for me because I'm backstage in a dark environment and, you know, I have 2 to 12 computer screens to stare at. And that bright color palette is just horrible for my eyes. But that dark gray color scheme is great and it's an easy one to go to. But here's where it gets amazing is they've rolled out a black color scheme, which has been a huge request of mine because it's basically the Adobe color scheme. It's Adobe's black interface kind of put into Office and it's phenomenal. It's really cool. And it, you know, just cuts down that glaring screen I get to see all the time. I have it on one of my computers, which is on a consumer level Office 365. And all my enterprise level Office 365, that option isn't available yet. So they roll things out at different stages and they're both on the insider build thing. So it's driving me crazy that one of them has this like color scheme I'm really coveting, but it's actually my Microsoft Surface and I just carry it around and it's, you know, I use it for small stuff. But so yeah, they roll things out at different times, but it is a favorite. They have color scheme options and they're getting darker. I like them.
And that's under file general options.
Yes. Yeah. And again, I did a whole, yeah, you can go to the blog. I did a blog post about that too, because I was very excited about it.
You know, I have to say, okay, I really like the black with PowerPoint, but once you set it, it translates across all Office products.
It's horrible in Outlook, I think. Mm-hmm. But, and yeah, that's like one of my requests. Could we make the color schemes for each app? But, mm-hmm. You know, I'm staring at PowerPoint behind us backstage. So,
right.
So it's funny. You actually have the black, Sandy?
I have it on my Surface Pro Book.
Oh,
I don't have it. I only have dark gray.
It depends on what Office 365 you're using. I mean, they're all subscriptions, but the consumer level gets one rollout cycle. The business or the standard gets another rollout cycle. And the enterprise, I think they're generally last because they're the biggest customer and they want to make sure things are right and all the other ones are testing it. So I think that's what I found is the rationale for the rollouts. It'll come. It'll just show up one day and you won't know about it until like 2 months after it's there. Go, hey, look.
Do you have your update options on automatic?
I do for Office, yes. Not for Windows. Windows 10, I don't let, I have it always ask me and defer and everything else because you never know when it's going to hang you up. I mean, I'm excited to get the updates. I just need to control when.
So as the Mac guy, I'm often jealous of the PC users because in a lot of cases, you do get a lot more features. The Mac, you know, in 2016 did, you know, get a lot of features. You know, you can now change page sizes without things distorting. You get animation painter, selection pane, auto align, and there are a lot of different things, but there's still some major things missing. And it's hard to, you know, say that they're not getting a little bit of short shrift. You know, PC obviously has a much larger user base. So I think there's still a lot of frustrations on the Mac side that it's still not quite in parity on with the PC.
I think they're getting there. I think they're committed to getting there. It's just slower than we'd like.
I agree to an extent. And I go back and forth on the Mac from 2011 to 2016. I think there are a lot of good things. It's just those couple things that are broken or, you know, still waiting that are kind of the big frustrations. I mean, like one of the huge things is, you know, if we want to talk about sort of the negatives in the current versions is on the Mac, you can't customize your QAT anymore, which is frustrating because you used to in 2011. And it's just one of these sort of, you know, 2016 has been out for a long time on the Mac. And for me, it's, you know, anybody that uses the QAT, the Quick Access Toolbar, and I know we all do, it just makes your life so much more quicker, your work, you know, more efficient. And to suddenly have that ripped away and have to go, you know, you want to align something, you have to go, you know, 3 clicks deep into a menu. Just feels like a real backward step.
Well, those 3 clicks are after you did 9 clicks to go remember where to find it because you always use it on the QAT.
Exactly. So that's one of the reasons I go back and forth between 2011. And there are also, I mean, there's some literal things that you can say, hey, we're missing this, we're missing this, we don't have that. And then there are just sort of the stability issues on Mac 2016 that I just have a lot of issues with. I just crash more often. You know, it just sometimes there's nothing on the screen and then I'll crash a minute later. And it's a little frustrating. I think there's some work to be done on 2016. That said, I keep trying to use it because I know I should. And there are some things that actually are easier to use. I think formatting is much easier on 2016, but I still go back and forth. If I have to really push something out and I can't crash in the next 20 minutes, I'll be on 2011.
Really? Huh.
Yep.
That's tough.
Yeah.
I find that because I'm on Mac based, but usually for me, Mac is moving to a different presentation software. But just 2016 not having as many pop-up dialogues. Now, you probably know all the 2011 pop-up dialogues, what to look for, where things are. It was always a hunt and peck. Like, where was that thing again? So the fact that more of them are in the animation, the action panes on the right and more on the ribbon, I can get around it much faster.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm in theory, you're right. But at the same time, yeah, that thing pops up on the right hand, but then it always auto-collapses everything. So you still end up clicking 2-3 times to get to something that should be one click.
Let's see here. Pitfalls. I got another one that this one bothers me only because it affects the client, the end user. And that's if you build a chart in 2016, just a simple bar chart with data labels on the top. A lot of times, even with the same font, you move it to somebody opens it in 2013, they get either an empty box or the little hash marks, little pound signs. And that's a huge display bug that Microsoft still hasn't fixed. And it's, I know there's, I mean, the workaround is to open it up in 2016, downsize the font so it's even smaller because those bounding boxes can't be changed. But that's just a huge one that bites us. It just came up like a week ago where the client was like, all my data's gone. We open it up. We see it just fine. What version are you using? 2013. We open it in 2013. Like, oh my gosh, the data's gone. Go to 2016, downsize the font one, which we don't want to do. Open it in 2013. Magically, everything's there. Or change the font. It's a pitfall and it's something that's being worked out because it's between multiple groups at Microsoft. And I'm sure there's a lot of logistics, but I don't know. Have you guys encountered that?
I haven't. I mean, I trust it's a problem. I just haven't encountered it. Data labels have always been a bear though. There's always something with them.
Oh, they are. There's always, but I do, there's another chart bug that is, I think, of course, will impact our client. When you do, you know, we all do this in our workflow to work more quickly. We create a chart, a column chart, for example, and we put our data in and we get it all customized. And then we duplicate the slide and on the next slide, edit that data. That we have two charts, duplicate the slide, go into the second slide, edit that data. Okay, so then you realize, oh, I need to edit the data on my original slide. When you open that original data edit dialog, the first chart defaults to the data.
Totally know what you're talking about. That it's they're linked.
Yep, they are linked. So big problem there. I know Microsoft has known about it for a while, so I'm just waiting for that to get worked through.
Have you experienced this one, Nolan?
I haven't. I know it exists. I know it's been an issue for a while, but fortunately, have not run into that.
We the first time I saw it, Sandy, was we were doing a project for a school, state school level information. It was all the statistics for all the school districts. I'll just say that. And it was one chart and they wanted to show, you know, so you basically put it to the next slide. We did the exact same thing, dupe the slide, open the data. And we basically were just highlighting each school district. Now there was like 90 of them. So we had 91 of these slides, you know, the first ones, here's the base. And they're like, let's talk about this school district. So all it was is highlighting it. And we put a data label on that one district. None of the other ones had districts. So a designer in my office went through, did all 90 slides, just dupe, you know, modify. We get done, we look at it, they're all the same as the last chart. We had spent like 2 hours, maybe more, only to discover everything we did was useless. Yeah, it's a huge bug.
Are we going to do a whole podcast on embarrassment in front of clients?
There you go.
Luckily, that was only internal and we couldn't bill any of that time, but we did.
How about so, Sandy, saves we actually, in front of clients? Saves in front of clients.
I got lots of those because I'm doing live shows all the time. Indeed. And how do you make things? Yeah, I got great stories about that. Let's see here. So this is all pitfalls. You know what? The big one for me, I'll let you go next, Nolan or Sandy, but the QAT. Speaking of the QAT, I live by it. I think it's the greatest customization thing in PowerPoint that was implemented. I think it's great. But with 2016, it's really big. I mean, like,
it's wide.
Wide. Yeah. All the buttons are space. I mean, it's made for touch interface, is what it looks like. But suddenly, I lost like a third of my buttons. They don't fit on the screen anymore. They're in that dumb little dropdown. And it used to be the QAT would do two lines. Now they're all stuck in this dropdown. So that, I mean, they're all there. They're just not all there. So that's, to me, that's a pitfall.
Yeah, then that's a problem. So on the Mac, I said there's no QAT customization. And I'm going to say that there still isn't. But at the last upgrade, the little what's new popped up. And it said, hey, you can customize your QAT now. And I was like, thank God. I went right to it. First of all, you could only have it above the ribbon, but whatever. I clicked it. It said, customize it. Their version of customizing now is you can add 5 more tools. And those 5 new tools, you can check them on or check them off, include things like save, print, slideshow. That's it. And there were 2 others or something. So supposedly they're going to keep working on it and make it better. But that's one of those lack of transparency things where you open it up and say, oh, I can finally customize it. Well, no, not really. You can add 5 more things to it.
Well, hopefully by the time this actually goes live, this podcast, that will be fixed. So everybody will go, I don't see that. And we'll be, you're lucky. So tips for 2016, Office 365, out of the box.
Before you move on, can I add something that I think is a potential pitfall in 2016? It's Morph.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
No, you know, and I love it. I love it as much as you. I think there's amazing things, but I just saw this video of someone who used Morph to create Prezi effect. And it is by all means dizzying. So I know there are appropriate applications for Prezi and this animation. I just want to caution users out there. You know, PowerPoint got a bad name with its animation, right? Everyone animated because they could. I don't want to see people morphing because they can.
That's a valid point.
Yeah, so just be careful out there.
Where was that? Is that like
it's
Vimeo
a
or a YouTube video?
So you can use it for good or evil, just like Prezi.
Perfect. Wow. I mean, I find limitations with Morph, like it can't do things that I'm hoping will be fixed, but I hadn't thought about it being used for bad. So I think, Nolan, you kind of talked about this, that Office 365 is good for anywhere from 2 to 5 installs, and then mobile apps on top of that or mobile versions on top of that. If you have multiple computers in your office, it's a great value. The multi-install is something that I've really maximized for TLC. We have 3 generic named user accounts on our Office 365 account. Those 3 accounts give us Office 2016 on 15 show computers. I mean, that's plus our fleet of iPads and Android tablets for testing and stuff. So it's...
Why can't you just install... Why can't you buy 15 installs for 1 username?
I don't...
Why do you have to...
Why do I need 3?
Why do you have to have 3 usernames?
Because they had to have a limit. And yeah, that would totally make sense too.
But that's not very small business friendly, right? Because you're not on an enterprise office situation,
I am, actually.
Right?
We're using Office 365 for enterprise, and each user gets 5 installs. But if you go buy the box set out of like Costco, you get 2 installs. So there's a couple of variations, but I see what you're saying is why can't I just manage 1 account and say how many I want?
Okay. Well, I guess it makes sense with users. I mean, nobody assumes that 1 user is going to have 15 computers.
Well,
except
hey,
in your
we
business.
Spread it out. We just show up with them all at the same time. But anyways, I think that's a cost effective. It's a good tip for 2016. You know, if you've got a couple of computers or the full version, the editable, like to edit on your Android, Sandy, you had to actually install or add your Office 365 credentials to unlock the editing capabilities. So that's included.
And the mobile versions are on top of your 5 installs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yes.
They're not. Okay. They're not.
Yeah.
They don't count, which is great. Yeah.
So, you know, I've got phone, iPad, Android, tablet. Sandy, do you use multiple inversions at all
I
any way?
I have Business Essentials. I have that mostly for group email, that sort of thing. But I have found the syncing. I have problems with syncing with business essentials.
I've heard that about you.
Thank you.
What about virtual machines? Anybody do installs on virtual VMs?
Yeah, before I got my Surface, I did. I have Parallels on my laptop and my iMac, where I've got, at least in one of them, I think I do have multiple OS. I got like Windows 8, Windows 10, 2013, 2016.
So on your Mac, are you running 2011 and 2016? Yeah.
The Mac version?
Side by side?
Yeah, I'm running. Oh yeah, just purely on the Mac side. I mean, I still have, you know, Parallels Windows install on there that I don't use very much. But yeah, I go back and forth, as I said, between 2011 and 2016. And by the way, you should do that if you're on a Mac. It's keep 2011. Don't get rid of it because you'll just need it. There's no harm in keeping it there. So definitely get 2016, but keep 2011 there just in case. And you can go back and forth. You can open files. I do it all the time.
Well, the reason I asked too is Microsoft kind of goes back and forth telling us whether or not they support that kind of environment.
Yes, they do. Hey, I'm still using the old version of Keynote.
Oh, we keep both of those. There's a lot of reasons. That's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah, that's a whole.
But yeah, we keep both those. I think on the Windows side, the multi-environment is a little more complex because it intermixes a lot of the data, like the Excel information is shared data between multiple installs, and that can kind of cause some issues. On the Mac, I think it's very siloed. That's why Macs have fewer problems because they run everything in its own little container and they don't talk to each other. So let's kind of wrap up our discussion here. We got a couple more segments after that. But to wrap up, for me, Office and PowerPoint 2016, I think that the subscription is the future. The new features and updates rolling out faster than ever. It is more reliable in the fact that things get fixed faster. We don't have to wait for service packs or security updates. Microsoft have done a really good job, if something does come up, about being reactionary and getting it fixed really, really quick. But I think it's the future. I think it's a great model that they're moving forward with.
Yeah. And as I mentioned, the bug fixing is great when it works. You know, you report a bug and then, you know, a couple of weeks later or a month later, it's fixed. It's kind of awesome.
Fantastic. Well, let's move into a couple of final segments. My presentation pro tip for this episode is using the most powerful design tool in PowerPoint, at least on the Windows side, the Quick Access Toolbar. By default, it's in the upper left-hand corner of the application. It has maybe like four buttons. And if you don't know what it is, you've just ignored it. But you can add buttons for everything. You can position it below the ribbon, which I recommend because it gets easier to access. And it will make slide design a lot faster. Even more valuable is where this really gets in, is that you can export your custom settings and load it onto any other computer. So you instantly have a familiar quick formatting buttons available. Just search, if you want to go to the PowerPoint blog and search QAT, the three letters, which is Quick Access Toolbar. I have a few posts that show all the buttons that I've added to our computers across our fleet. They also have step-by-step on how to save it out and install it on another computer. In addition, I have a download so you can cheat and just instantly install my version as a starting point. But the QAT we mentioned earlier, sorry, Mac side, I know you just lost it. It's something you really need to take advantage of if you're designing slides.
My tip, obviously, we've talked about the QAT not being on the Mac, but this is something that not a lot of people know about, and I to be honest, only learned about it maybe last year or so. You can break apart SmartArt. I hate using SmartArt, and I've actually started teaching people how to create process graphics in my training. And very often I'll say start with SmartArt, but don't end there. So you can start with SmartArt, something that looks like what everybody else has, but take it a step further. So insert SmartArt, do whatever you want with it. Then go to convert. So at the top right, if you're on the PC, the top right format tab, there'll be a little button called convert. You can also do this by right-clicking. So right-click or go up to that button, your SmartArt, and you convert it to shapes. That's the function. And what you'll see instantly, your smart art becomes a series of shapes and it's grouped. So you'll need to ungroup it more. But it's this great way of kind of letting smart art get you halfway there. And then you just right click and you've got shapes. And now you can, I just find it easier to format when you're dealing with shapes and not in smart art. And there's some other techniques for breaking, you know, using smart art to create various layouts and things. If you just, you can sort of take a text blocks of bullet points, convert that to smart art, then convert that to shapes, which is a cool thing to do. That's a few different steps, but yeah, so you can convert smart art to shapes.
I think that's great. Both of them. You know, I'm going to go a little further to say users tend to make PowerPoint a lot more difficult than it has to be when Microsoft has already done a lot of the work for them. Simple steps, applying themes. If you open a blank presentation and go to the design tab, there are tons of theme design ideas from which you can select. When you do that, you get your great color choices, you get consistent fonts, and you don't have to guess anymore. But most importantly, you get custom layouts. So you go from looking like you pieced together a bunch of content to something that could start to look a little more professionally designed with consistent colors, consistent headline placement, consistent body copy placement. So I would just encourage users to check out the themes and start using the multiple layout.
And just like SmartArt, you can use it as a starting point. You can always customize beyond there. You like that layout, but you hate that color orange. Great. Change that color. And now you've customized, you have your own custom layout, custom theme.
Well, and the other, what it also does is say you have to insert charts. And this is for the everyday user, corporations. There's some customization that goes along in that. But once you've chosen a theme, you insert a chart and you've got the colors you need.
Caution for corporate users. People spend a lot of time and resources making a corporate template so everybody looks the same across the corporate use. And that's where that customization should be adhered to. Just throwing warnings out there for your corporate users.
So now we're going to open it up to anything we find cool, not just presentation related, but cool stuff out there. Maybe you can use it with presentation or just on without. My first tip is a cool website called cloudconvert.com. It's a free online conversion tool, which allows you to basically convert any file format to any other file format. So it can be used to convert, you know, a .svg to a .eps, to a png, to a jpeg, to an emf. And we actually use this workflow to help PC users who don't have Illustrator actually get editable icons into PowerPoint, which is something we can maybe talk about on a future podcast. But it's free. It's drag and drop. You can, if you have a JPEG that needs to be a PNG and you don't have Photoshop, just drag it into the website, say, I want a PNG, download it, you're done. I don't think you even have to register for it. So it's a very, very cool website.
I have to try that. That's great. I love Jamie Groach, and Jamie, please forgive me for butchering your last name. Jamie Groach's text to outline add-in, and that allows you to create PowerPoint shapes from text. So with the click of a button, you can convert individual text boxes. It doesn't do placeholders, text boxes to shapes. So now you can apply masks. You can, you can apply it to non-system fonts so you don't lose fonts when you send them out. It's a really great tool. And it's cool. Free, if I didn't say that.
It's like create outlines in Illustrator or InDesign.
Make sure I get links to that. We'll make sure they're in the show notes because I don't think I've ever looked at that one. I'll have to check that out because that is not our... I generally use the ping method just because it's easy to do within PowerPoint, but only for like keywords, not whole paragraph things. My tech tip. Let me reemphasize: this podcast has no paid sponsors or anything to influence what we say. So mine is lynda.com's offline Windows app. They have an iPad or an iOS app, but they've recently added the Windows one. As you know, I'm constantly flying around the country to be on-site graphics op or PowerPoint expert at all these big conferences, which is a ton of fun. But I'm not really a big TV or movie guy, so plain entertainment systems, they're not really a big thing for me. It's also, I view it as my rare time to be offline. So I generally don't pay for the flight Wi-Fi. I have no cell phone service. I can sleep, which I do a lot on airplanes. But I can spend time going over things now that are difficult for me to do when I'm in the design studio or with clients. For me lately, it's been loading up video tutorials from lynda.com onto my Surface and watching them, making some notes and getting some great design topics just kind of under my belt. I value it, and I think it's a great offline tool. You do need a subscription to lynda.com, but the offline player app itself is free and you can load it up with as many as you want. So I think it's a fun, great thing.
What have you watched lately?
Lately, I went through, well, this is our first episode of the podcast. Just a little while ago, I went through a great series by a guy named Richard Harrington, all about producing professional podcasts. He has a ton of audio stuff, but he had this whole series on podcasts, and it was really, I took a lot of notes on it. Some of it is definitely being applied now. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. Check us out at www.tlccreative.com and my blog, now in its eighth year, thepowerpointblog.com. Thanks for joining us for our first podcast.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. You can subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. If your organization is interested in on-site presentation or data visualization training, drop me a line or go to nolanhamescreative.com.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website at presentationwiz.biz and my blog at pptwizblog, or just search for Sandra Johnson with PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For today's episode, show notes, links, and more, visit us at our website, thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website. If you like us, rate us and leave us a review on iTunes. It's always appreciated. You could contact us with show suggestions, questions for the host, or leave a comment at our podcast website. Look for new episodes every first and third Tuesday of each month.
Cool. We're done.